This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one-man band. I'm the number one fan. Me and my 88. Me and my 88.
Welcome to another episode of Me and My 88 Friends. I'm Lawrence Tuning, your host. I want to start the episode today with two songs we're going to play back to back. The first song is called A Simple Faith. I recorded that on my most recent CD a few years ago, but my current band went in and recorded it, our version of it, just a few weeks ago. I call it my current band because we don't have a name. But they are wonderful musicians and wonderful people. And so that will be the first song, A Simple Faith. The second song was recorded at a coffee house here in Florence, South Carolina, called Lula's. And it is called Fairweather Friend. Before The Anchor Holds was written, this was one of my most requested songs. So I hope you enjoy these two songs. After that, I want to introduce our special guest. Ask me
Today my heart was broken. I sat down and I cried. I lost something very dear to me. I felt alone inside. I needed to talk to someone. All that I could do was pray. Then I heard a still small voice. This is what I heard it say. You loved me in the autumn. Love me in the spring. You loved me when the summer breeze was ever so gently blowing. But will you love me when the winter comes and you feel the icy wind? Will you stay with me, or will you be my fair weather friend? I've known the joy of laughter. Sung those songs of praise. I have lifted my voice. My heart has rejoiced. Another time and place. But today my heart is breaking. The laughter just isn't there. Once again, I hear that still small voice whispering in my ear. You love me in the autumn. You love me in the spring. Summer breeze was ever so gently blowing. But will you love me when the winter comes and you feel the icy wind? Will you stay with me, or will you be shall pass, and I'll learn again to smile. And I will love you in the autumn. Lord, I'm gonna love you in the spring.
In our episode last week, a conversation with two pastors here in Florence, and we talked all about the challenges and the joys of being a pastor. Now, some of you might have heard them refer to me as being a pastor. Well, the fact of the matter is, I was a pastor for about 16 years, actually longer than that if you include living in Indiana, a few years of that. But from about 1978 to 1994, I was one of two pastors, full-time pastors, of a non-denominational church in Marlborough, Massachusetts, called Marlborough Christian Fellowship. We never owned a building. We met in a gymnasium of the Marlborough Girls Club. Some people called our church Our Lady of the Slam Dunk. That's what people called us. But those were wonderful days. I've got great memories of being a pastor. And I had a great blessing this week. Two of our former parishioners came to see us. Now, they have great distinction because of one thing. They were pastored by me by a number of years and survived to tell it. But they are RVers now. They sold their house, and they live in an RV in Florida half the year and in Spokane, Washington, the other half. And I want to just say before we get started, these people are the creme de la creme, as they say in France. They were a joy, a delight to pastor. And I'm just so happy they came to see us, and they still at least say they love us. So we're just going to chat. So hi, Paul.
Hello.
Hi, Sandra.
Hello, Lawrence.
You know I'm going to call you Sandy because that's how I know you. And I'm just refresh my memory. I know we talked about it the other day. What is the time frame? What years were you a part of our church?
82 to 89,
7 years.
Best years of our lives.
Yep.
Well, we had some great memories. Yeah. And you guys are fabulous singers and musicians. Your children are fabulous. They have a son who was signed to a record deal with Sony Records a few years ago. And just a great, great bunch of people. So we're just going to chat now. We're going to talk about spiritual things and just regular things. So here's my first question. What's it like being an RVer? I mean, really, what was the change like? I can't imagine selling everything, and then everything you own is in 32 feet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you, obviously, just like anything, you know, you kind of do it a little at a time. We had yard sales and that sort of stuff, you know, and then we did store our stuff for a year after we sold our house. But as far as what it's like, we love it because we get to do this. We get to see people we love. I mean, we were 5 months in one place and then 5 months in another place. And then there's 1 month traveling in the winter, 1 month traveling in the in the fall or in the spring. And to be able to go on our way back to stop and see friends and family, it's amazing.
So you're on your way right now back to Washington State, Spokane, and we're going to hear from you all later. We actually have recorded us singing together, which we'll play later in the broadcast. But, okay, so I want to ask you one other thing, Paul, and then we're going to get to more serious stuff. You have amazed me. I can't fathom this. I know you don't lie, but if I didn't know you better, I would swear you were lying. You did what they call an Iron Man. Iron Man. I want you to tell the people what an Iron Man is. What did you do within a 24-hour period? It was 24 hours, right?
Yeah. Well, of course, it didn't take 24 hours. That would be terrible. You would try to get it as fast as you can. But there's a swim, bike, and run, and the swim is 2.1 miles. The bike is 112 miles, and the run, of course, is a marathon, 26.2 miles.
Okay, now, swimming 2 miles. I could do that. It would take about 4 hours, but I could do it. Lay on my back, float when I got tired. But then 112 miles on a bicycle. And then after that, you wipe the sweat off, and you start running.
Yeah.
For what,
26.2 miles. It's 0.2 that's the real killer.
How long did it take you to do all that?
You know, I wish I could remember, actually, but it wasn't a great time. I had high expectations, and I had trained really well. I had just come off running Boston. So I was in very good shape for
Boston
that.
Marathon.
Yeah, Boston Marathon.
That's the other way around. Actually, that's not true. It was the other way around. But I was training, you know, for the triathlon. And so I knew what my, you know, I had qualified for Boston. So I kind of knew what my marathon time should be. So what I would add like 30 minutes thinking, oh, I'll be tired. But it took me a lot longer because I had some issues. But
He messed up on his nutrition. He drank something that was too concentrated, and then he had stomach issues, and he was really struggling.
Well, it totally shut down my digestive system. And so when I started running, there was this water, but it wasn't here. It was up here in my high part of my stomach. Anyway, long story short, it took a lot longer to do the marathon than, I mean, I had hoped 4 hours to do a marathon, but I think it took 5 or 5.5.
I got two questions for you.
Why?
First question is that you had to train starting small and just adding a little bit.
Yeah.
What did you start with?
Oh, just there's little ones called sprints, and those are just tiny. It's like a 300 meter swim. It's like a 12 mile bike, and then it's like a three mile run. So it's very small, and it was kind of nice. I had a training partner, and what we did is we did 12 triathlons in a row for 12 weekends, and we just upped the distance every weekend, you know, until we got to like a half Ironman distance.
See, there's a spiritual principle to that.
I think so, yeah.
The law of use.
Yeah.
He who's faithful in a few things will be faithful in much, and I think there's lessons we can learn with that we get so discouraged when we don't perfect something the first stab around. We were talking about prayer earlier. Mm-hmm. First time you pray for something and it doesn't get answered right away. Okay, my second question is, and you're right, why? I mean, do you get joy out of that?
Oh, absolutely.
He loves a challenge, and he needs a carrot out in front of him to motivate him to do the... to push the extra mile.
Now, for me, get a bag of popcorn and a soda and go to a movie. You know.
Well, it's funny because just to go out and exercise for your health's sake, just to be healthy, that's not a lot of motivation for me anyway. Some people can do that. I just always felt like I needed something to shoot for in order to get me in better and better and better shape. And so,
and that makes me think of, without a vision, the people perish.
Yeah.
If you don't have a goal out in front of you,
true,
then you're just wandering, you're just going nowhere.
That's right.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of spiritual things you can learn in that. Now, Paul, we're going to probably edit this out, but we're just talking now. Mm-hmm. I always resist this, but I'm going to tell you people right now. Every time I see this man, I say, you are despicable. You are disgusting. He's in perfect health. How old are you, Paul?
66.
He looks about like he's 50 years old. No fat. He's got almost all of his hair left. I have a mortician friend, what we used to call an undertaker, in the next town over. And I've known him since he was a teenager. And I saw him at a funeral one time. I called him over. I said, now listen to me. You do great work, everybody I've seen. And I want you to fix me up. But I said, I don't care what you do, how much makeup. I want to look just like George Clooney. When you lay me out, I said, spare no expense. And so then it was a reception afterwards. He was going out the door and I said, hey, come here. And I whispered in his ear, I said, remember two words, George Clooney. He whispered to me, he said, Lawrence, remember two words, closed casket.
Oh, dear.
But I mean, really, you're just always in such good shape. And all. Okay, let's talk about God now. Enough of this tomfoolery. But okay, I always ask my guests on this show how they came to the Lord. You know, not the long, long, long version, but it's always to me just fascinating what different things God uses to bring us to Himself.
Yeah.
I always say this, we know the word says you cannot come to God unless He draws you. He makes the first move. And we've had some amazing testimonies. Sometimes God uses a church service, sometimes a friendship, sometimes reading something. So just quickly, we'll start with you, Sandy. How did you come to the Lord?
Well, I was raised going to Baptist church, and so I loved the fact that you memorized the Bible, and it was very scripture-based. And when I saw my older sisters getting baptized, I said, I want to get baptized. My mom was like, oh, you're just trying to follow the crowd. But I persisted. I really, because I saw, oh, here's a way to follow Jesus. I didn't know there was a way. So she let me get baptized when I was 9, and I felt the Holy Spirit's presence so strongly. I was shaken like a leaf, and I didn't know what that was. And then, you know, my parents got divorced. Everybody stopped going to church. I kept walking to the neighborhood church. And then hit kind of a rough patch when I was 12, the Lord was strongly calling me. But I sat in the back of the church and just cried my eyes out, because now I'm no longer in the First Baptist Church. I'm in the Second Baptist Church. And if I go up for altar call, that means I'm going to get baptized. But I've already done that and become a member of the First Church. And I didn't know what to do, because I thought, I want to respond to the Lord. And I just sat there and wept and wept. And nobody ever approached me and said, you know, why are you crying? Yeah. What, do you need help? And it's like, I did, because I didn't know how I could respond to God. So then several more years went by. And when I was 15, my life was kind of falling apart. And my sister kept bugging me, said, come to hear our concert. She just wouldn't leave me alone. So I went. I thought, I'll just get her off my back and then that's it. I won't go again. But as soon as I walked into the foyer of that church, and of course I was late, so the foyer was empty. Everybody was in the room already, and the love that I felt when I walked into that big open area just drew me. I'd never felt anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm going to sit in the back and not talk to anybody and leave. But I walked in and I got the closest seat I could find. And then I was enraptured as this group, I think it was called Truth.
Yeah, Truth.
Yeah, the young people, they had this glow on their face and they were singing with such excitement. And I was just like on the edge of my seat going, oh, I don't know what they have, but I want it. And then the evangelist spoke at the end, and I remember my heart was beating out of my chest, and I'd gone forward on an altar call probably in like 2 years before that. and nothing, you know, happened from it. And so I thought, I'm not going to do that again. But it was so hard hitting, and it was like, you know, I felt like this is my chance. And also, here's the thing. Leading up to that, my sister and I were planning on going on a trip to Spokane, Washington, which I'd never even heard of at that time, from Boise, Idaho, to see the World's Fair. It was 1974, I think. And, I started getting premonitions before we left, and it was one after another that if I went on this trip, I wasn't coming back. And suddenly the mortality hit me that, you know, I could be separated from God forever, because I just knew I wasn't ready. And I became so frightened at that thought. The thought of dying wasn't what upset me. The thought of never being able to be around Jesus, because even though I didn't know how to be saved, he'd drawn me from an early age. Little kid, you know, I remember just feeling love towards him when I'd look at a picture, you know, of him and sing songs about him. So I didn't know what to do, and so this friend that I used to walk with to church with, she said, well, have you prayed? And I was like, oh, duh, I hadn't thought of that. So I just said, Lord, whatever you have to do to get me ready to be with you, when I go, I want to be with you, so do whatever it takes. And I didn't know what that was going to be, so when my sister was on the way to get me, she crashed her car. She wasn't hurt, but we couldn't go on the trip. And I was like, oh, thank God. You know? And so that was like the moment when I said, okay, Lord, I'm yours. But I still didn't know what to do about that. And so then it was a month or so before I got invited to church. And so there I am. And I'm like, you know, if this was my last night on earth, I know that I need to do this. And so, you know, with my heart pounding out of my chest and feeling humiliated, I didn't want people to see that I was a sinner that needed to be saved, you know. I went to the altar, and boy, I cried more tears than I've ever cried in my life, and fell deeply, madly in love with Jesus, and it turned my life completely right side up, and I've just never been the same since.
If you just joined this show is called Me and My 88 Friends. I'm Lawrence Tuning, your host, and I'm conversing with two of my great friends who I met in the 1980s when I was their pastor, Paul and Sandy Mooner. They're from Spokane, Washington, for 5 months of the year, Melbourne, Florida for 5 months, and the other 2 months are spent driving across America in an RV. They live in an RV. And they're talented people. We're going to hear them sing in just a few minutes. But we just finished talking to Sandy about your testimony, Sandy. And now, Paul, I want to know how you came to Jesus and how old you were, where you were.
Well, I think as a young kid, I had given my life to Jesus a couple times in different churches, but never seemed like there was any follow-up, right? And so nothing really happened. And then I got in the Air Force, and I don't know. I think God works different ways with different people. And for me, I didn't know how to express it, but my gut was troubling. You know, my soul. There was just something that was troubling. I knew there was just something that wasn't right, and so I was just seeking, trying to find out. What's going on? Something was not right in my gut. I had a Christian roommate, and he never hit me over the head with Christianity or anything, but he lived his life, and he was a praying guy. And we did a lot of backpacking, and finally, he always carried a little Testament in his coat pocket. And so I don't know why I did. You know, I happened to have one, so I did. And I remember we were backpacking and we went up to Sawtooth Lake in the Sawtooth Mountains in Idaho. And I can't even remember the exact situation, but I just remember needing to get away from everybody. And I went up and climbed up on this hill. And in the Sawtooth Mountains, it's this pitch dark. And when you looked up in the sky, there was not another place to stick a star. I mean, it was so thick. And I just remember praying and saying, God, I don't know exactly what's going on or how to ask, but I ask you into my heart. And I was pretty much that simple. And I came down and I said, hey guys, I think I just asked Jesus into my heart. And they, boom, they all sat around and we all prayed. And and that was, I was probably, that was 19, what did I say, 75 is what we said?
I think it was around then.
Yeah.
So you were probably about 19 years old.
Yeah,
or 20.
20, yeah, I think it was 20.
That's so wonderful. Now, we're going to hear from Paul and Sandy, and you're going to have to listen to me too, because I'm going to sing right along with them. But just one more question I want to ask you guys before we do our music for the radio land, as they used to call it when I was growing up. We were part of a church back in the 80s. We were all young couples, and those were the years all of our kids were crawling around all over the place. Just a lightning question, not real long, but what stands out in the years we all had together?
The worship was just the sweetest.
Yeah.
Being with people that love Jesus and that you love each other so much, you know, that unity of the brothers that, you know, that Jesus talks about. They'll know that we are Christians by our love. And just to be able to worship with people who love the Lord and love each other is the sweetest thing that I can't even describe how much it meant to me. Yeah. And so, like, being here with you right now and being able to worship and have you play the piano and stuff, it's just my heart swells with such joy that I can barely contain myself. 'Cause that's a rare thing, you know, to find people that are so devoted to God and to each other that when they worship, the sweetness of heaven comes down and it's like everything just opens up and you feel like you're in heaven. And I mean, I always have had that memory, and being able to come back and be with you and others, it all is just like right there, like it always was.
Amen.
And I want to dovetail on that when you talked about freedom. One of the things, it still blows me away today that you guys did this, but, and I don't remember, it may have just been a season, but I remember you told people, said, hey, next Sunday, you bring whatever instrument you play, and just stand up alongside the wall, and just learn these songs and play along. That was unheard of. Mm-hmm. And people, and it wasn't chaos. It wasn't like somebody brought bagpipes or anything. It was just people that were maybe timid. They could stand next to a wall, and the chords were up there, because back then there was the words and the chords that were shown up on the thing.
Yes, there was. You're right.
And we could learn all together, whether it was a flute, a guitar, or whatever. And I'm telling you, I've never seen that anywhere else.
Mm. Yeah,
that was amazing.
It's a wonderful time. Okay, now we're going to switch gears, and we're going to sing a little bit.
Oh, no.
This next segment was recorded earlier today in the home of my drummer, Keith Hamrick. And it was a great joy to me to be able to sing together with you guys.
Same here.
So let's go over to Keith's house now. We're at the home of drummer extraordinaire Keith Hamrick. I feel so blessed to have him as a drummer at this point. And we are at his practice place. And Paul and Sandy have just met him for the first time. But I found out that Sandy and Keith have a mutual acquaintance. And so... Sandy, tell me who your uncle was.
Paul Revere, not the one who rode through the town yelling, the British are coming, but the Paul Revere and the Raiders.
Paul Revere and the Raiders. Now, you millennials may not know who we're talking about, but I guarantee you every baby boomer that hears this will know exactly who we're talking about. Paul Revere and the Raiders. Paul Revere had a whole bunch of hits, and he was on a TV show, Where the Action Is. Mm-hmm. He was like one of the main guys on there. Big, big singer. Sold millions of records.
Kicks just keep getting harder to find, and all your kicks ain't bringing you peace of mind. Before you find out, it's
And Keith knew your Uncle Sandy.
Awesome.
And you want to tell us, Keith, about how you met him and what you thought of her uncle?
I was a drummer for Billy Joe Royal. Billy Joe and Paul Revere were great friends from their touring days with Dick Clark's Caravan of the Stars. Man, I'm going to tell you, Paul was one of the best showmen I've ever seen. Every night he held the audience in the palm of his hand. He had full control during from the time the show started till the time it ended. The entire band was just amazing. They were incredible musicians and just what showmanship. It was just amazing to watch. Paul Revere is actually the one who is responsible for giving me the nickname Hammer. Every night during their show, Paul would introduce Omar, their drummer, as Baby Raider. At that point, Omar would go into a drum solo. Well, one night during our show, I did a drum solo. So when Paul Revere and the Raiders came on for their set, when it came time for Baby Raider to play his drum solo, Paul says, normally Baby Raider plays a drum solo at this point, but since Baby Hammer did one earlier, we'll skip that part. Well, after that, everyone started calling me Baby Hammer. I finally told him, hey, guys, Hammer sounds pretty cool, but you've got to drop the baby part. That's just not going to work. So to this day, I'm still called Hammer.
And we were talking last night with, I'm just going to call you Sandy. I can't call you the new formal name. But you told me last night, and I thought this was so wonderful, that you actually won him to the Lord on his deathbed, right?
Yeah, I had the privilege of praying
with him. Can you tell us
about
that?
Yeah, he was dying of brain cancer, and my dad had died years before of pancreatic cancer, and so I was sitting visiting with him, and I had prayed for about a month before I went down to Boise to visit, and just really felt like my dad had said that he had a near-death experience when he was dying, and he went up. He floated up. He looked down at his body taking a nap on the couch, and he went, wow, I thought I was better looking than that. And then he was with Jesus, and the Lord's after some things that he couldn't tell us, but Jesus said, are you ready to come home? And he said, well, actually, I have a brother who I love dearly, and I've never shared the gospel with him. I've never told him about you. So the Lord sent him back for that purpose. Well, that was in 78, 79, and so, you know, these decades later, I felt like I need to finish the job for my dad. Dad and I need to do this together. So I was praying with him, and I said, you know, before I go, I just feel like I need to ask you, do you want to pray and ask Jesus to be your Lord and Savior and come into your heart? And he said, yes. So we did it, and he really belted out he was on his deathbed, so his voice was a little weak, but when it got to the part that said, you know, Lord, you, Jesus, you are my Lord and Savior, he belted it out. And I just felt, you know, God's presence, angels, my dad, you know, rejoicing, high-fiving me. and then my Aunt Virginia, she just wept when I told her because she had been really praying for him. And she'd always, you know, he was a good guy. I mean, he was raised by, you know, good Mennonite, German family, but he just hadn't, either he hadn't made that decision or he needed to do it again to put his mind at peace, to know, really know where he was going and who he belonged to.
What a great honor to be able to be the one who led him in there. That's just great. So, and Paul, we're going to get you to sing now, but you told me the kind of character he was. Remember you told me about her father. Can you say that before we...
Yeah, it was during that same time. Sandy and I were first married, and we lived right next door to Paul's parents. And Lester, Sandy's dad, was living in the basement. And so I was just over visiting, and Paul came in, and we were just visiting together. And Lester needed to use the facilities, and, you know, no qualms. Paul just picked him up, took him to the bathroom, came out. When he finished, walked in, brought him back, and it just, you know, it just impressed me. You know, here this was a rock star, right? But, you know, when it came to his brother, he absolutely loved him.
That's great. Now, you're going to sing us a song. We're going to sing a few songs. This is a Barry McGuire song. And I'm supposed to give you a C chord, and we go from there.
Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, with all thy strength. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Love is gentle, love is kind. Love is giving, and it's not blind. Love is choosing for the right. Rejecting the wrong. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, with all thy strength. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Love is keeping his commands. Great love hath no man that he lay down his life for a friend. Suffering long.
Wonderful. That song was by Barry McGuire. Barry McGuire was a contemporary of your Uncle Paul Revere and of Billy Joe Royal. He had the song The Eve of Destruction with that low, raspy voice. My blood's coagulating. But he came to the Lord at the height of his career. And it's very interesting. When you were coming to our church, I was your pastor. This is the reason I wanted you to sing a song about Barry McGuire, by Barry McGuire. I was riding through town one day, and this impression came to my mind, and it really stayed there, and it stayed there all day. You need to bring Barry McGuire to town to do a concert. And it was specific. It wasn't do a concert. It was Barry McGuire. So, you know, I talked to the rest of the leadership, and so we gave it a shot. We called, and he came. You know, we had a fee, but it wasn't that bad. He came. We did it, if you remember. I know you remember, Paul. Yeah. At the high school. And we were praying in backstage before the concert started. And there was a man that just showed up. And he was a man in the community, Don Weitzel, who was the co-pastor of our church. He worked at a hardware store at the time. It was bivocational. And this was a customer he saw regularly, and he thought, what in the world is he doing backstage in the prayer room? And Barry McGuire looked up from the prayer and burst into tears. And they ran together and hugged each other, and Barry McGuire was sobbing. He said, I thought you were dead. I've wanted to find you all these years. And it turned out that he had lived with this guy when he was in the Broadway musical Hair. They had gotten arrested together and everything for protesting the war or whatever. And they had lost contact with each other. And that man just happened to see a poster that we'd put up at a gas station. And after all these years, they reconnected. And Barry was such a sweet guy he was. You know, he had told us earlier, he said, I really want to go straight to bed when this is over. I'm really tired. But that didn't happen. He went home with that guy, and they spent the whole night talking about the Lord and all that. And so there was a reason why that impression was so strong, bring Barry McGuire to town. Sometimes we don't know why we have these strong impressions, but and he was you were quite the fan of him, Paul. Can you tell us that? Then we're just going to sing. We're not going to talk anymore. But
he was a big fan. I was a big fan of him, and I'm so sorry.
He was my biggest fan.
Yeah, he was my biggest fan, yeah. And so we're at the school. I'm walking, and I've just been on pins and needles all day, and I'm walking down the hallway, and the door is open, and this bright light, and in walks this guy. And he's walking towards me, and he's carrying his guitar, and he's walking closer and closer. And he comes by me, and I go, so you're Barry. He just puts his hand on my shoulder and said, yeah, brother, and keeps walking.
He had a lot of great Christian songs. And, of course, all the little kids of that era knew the song Bullfrogs and Butterflies. They've both been born again. So let's sing another one here. I wrote this song.
Let me worship you today in the stillness of I linger here worshiping you.
Let's do it again.
Let me worship you today in the still. As I linger here worshiping you, as I linger here worshiping you, as I linger here worshiping you.
Paul and Sandy, you taught this song to me years ago. Nobody knows who even wrote it, although we know David wrote the words of the Psalms.
hear my cry, oh Lord, attend to my prayer. From the ends of the earth will I cry unto thee. When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to
has been a shelter for me. And a strong tower from the enemy. When my heart is my heart is overwhelmed. it's just so great to sing with you guys again. This has been wonderful.
The more I seek you, the more I find you. The more I find you, the more I love you. I want to sit at your feet, drink from the cup in your hand, lay back against you.
It's been a great joy to have Paul and Sandy Mutter pop by in their RV for a couple of days and to be able to sing together. I love singing with them. That's it for this episode of Me and My 88 Friends. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you'll join